Good evening and welcome to the Wednesday night talk that's also a middle of a session, somewhat unusual for us. So we won't have a regular tea after the talk, but we will have two periods of zazen, and you're welcome to join in if you'd like. This is what we're calling a Genzo-e Sesshin, which means we're taking up a chapter of Dogen's Shobo Genzo. Dogen, our ancient Japanese founder, his masterwork, The Treasury of the True Dharma Eye. So we're having an eye treasury assembly. That's a Genzo-e, where we're taking up a particular chapter of this eye treasury text and looking at it in great detail, interspersed with lots of silent sitting. So we've arrived at the part of this work of Dogen, this work called One Bright Pearl. We've arrived at the part, the center, the central story in this writing of Dogen. So tonight we can look at that. This old Zen story from 9th century China. There were some Zen practitioners, and one day one of them came to a teacher named Xuan Sha and said, "I hear you have this saying," because supposedly he had this saying that he always said. He always said, the whole universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. So this monk came and said, "I hear you have this saying, the whole universe in 10 directions and everywhere, the entire universe is simply one bright pearl. How can someone like me understand this?" And the teacher, Xuan Sha, said, "The whole universe in all directions is one bright pearl. What's the use of understanding?" The next day, Xuan Sha went back to that same monk and said, "The whole universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. How do you understand this?" And the monk said, "The whole universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. What's the use of understanding?" And Xuan Sha said, "I see that you are alive, living in the dark mountain cave of demons. That's our story for this week." The story would be simpler if it was just the whole universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. But it would be hard to just keep telling that story for all these talks every morning and afternoon for all of Sesshin. So luckily we have some dialogue about this fact. that the whole universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. But if you forget everything else that was said tonight, if you can remember that, you can keep that in your jewelry box for your life, and maybe maybe pull it out when times are difficult, because it says a lot there already. The whole universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. It's, for one thing, it's one. It's not like a bunch of different pearls. According to this phrase, the whole universe is one pearl. And secondly, it's bright. It's luminous, it's shining, it's radiant. The character for bright here can also mean like knowing or aware. In Chinese, when they translate the word ignorance, this Buddhist term avidya, ignorance, they use this character with no in front of it. So like no brightness, no light is ignorance. So light or brightness is vidya, which is like knowing or just pure awareness. So this pearl, it's one, this universe is one, it's bright. And it's a pearl, or a round bead. It is, oh, we don't know how big, but it's round in this image. It has no edges, it has no seams, it has no top and bottom, and it rolls freely in all directions. It's not limited to like one track. The whole universe is one bright pearl. So we've been looking at these teachings the past few months of the Yogacara, or mind-only school of Buddha Dharma. And one of the main teachings of the school is that there's these three aspects of everything. Of every, let's say, experience. Every experience we have has these three characteristics. And one of them is called the sutra uses this term, other dependent. It's the other dependent character, which means that our experience has this aspect that's dependent on everything else. And the way that it's appearing to arise each moment is not coming from just us. It's not just under our control. And it's arising and ceasing every moment, completely impermanent. And it's how it happens is inconceivable. Every experience we have right now, and every other one as well, has this quality. It's inconceivably appearing in our awareness, due to myriad conditions other than itself. This is its other dependent quality. And it can't be grasped, and it can't really be, found. Ultimately, it's an appearance. Our experience is like an appearance. So if we have a visual experience, that's literally, it's an appearance of what's happening. If we have a sound experience, that's kind of like an appearance too. It's a coming together of many factors in this inconceivable way. And I propose that this Zen saying that the whole universe is one bright pearl is another way of talking about this aspect of our experience, this inconceivable appearance of an interdependently arising moment of life. It's like one bright pearl. It's everything's included. And it's ungraspable. If we try to get a hold of it, it's slippery and bright and rolls out of our hand. And from the point of view of mind, it's like a bright knowing, awareness, each experience. And what the sutra we've been studying says, how does a bodhisattva know this other dependent character? How does a bodhisattva know this inconceivably arising appearance of our experience of life right now? The only way we can know it, the sutra says, is by strongly grasping it. Remember, it's ungraspable, but we can know it by, you could say, trying to, thinking that we can grasp it as being something, some specific thing, some limited thing that's not like spherical, but that has like edges that separate it from other things. And to do this, we use words and language. So this pile here, whatever is in here, this has this inconceivable, other-dependent quality that's like, is coming to be in our experience here as a visual object and as a mental object and everything, due to many, many conditions of this mind. This mind is needed to make this happen, and it's inconceivable how this comes to be. It's just this momentary appearance. But the way we can know that, the way we can know this aspect of it, is by calling it a book, and then thinking, or a pile of books. Or if we don't know what it is, we can always find some label, and we call it a stack of stuff wrapped in cloth. And then we can know it. Then we grasp it. We adhere to it as being a pile of something. But before we do that, it's just one bright pearl. It's undifferentiated in this vast, wide universe, ten-direction universe, where the universe is an arising event, right? It's like the universe is not nothing. It's like everything. The universe is everything, and appearing in this moment, but nothing's actually separate. Everything is dependent on everything else. So our experience of this little pile here is much vaster than we think it to be when we call it just a pile of something in a cloth. But we want to know. We're not satisfied, right? We're just, this is like, you know, some aspect of one bright pearl. We can't use books and things if we don't limit it to a book or something useful. So, in this story, the monk says, well, I hear you have this saying that the whole universe is one bright pearl, but how can I understand this? I actually want to get a hold of this phrase because I have a sense that it's maybe actually could be really helpful to understand how the whole universe is one bright pearl. So how can someone like me understand this? But the teacher just says, the whole universe is one bright pearl. What use is understanding? Or what's it have to do with understanding? Because as soon as we understand that, get a hold of that in some way, we limit this inconceivable, shining, seamless pearl, and we make it into like a little pile of books or something, which is necessary. As I say, right, we need to do that in order to read the book, but something's lost at the same time as something's gained. So, in the sutra, this quality of things, that's the way that we grasp this inconceivable aspect of them, using words and concepts, and limit it into what seems to be like some essentially existing thing. And the sutra is called the imputational character, or the imaginary character of things. They have this inconceivable, you know, ultimately ungraspable, momentarily appearing quality, dependent on everything else, and then they have this immediately narrowing, fixating quality when we imagine them to be something, or we imagine the one bright pearl to be broken into many different like things, like books and tables and floors. So we could see that the whole universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. It's like this other dependent character, this inconceivably arising character, and the how can I understand this? It's like the imputational, imaginary character trying to get a hold of one bright pearl. And then in the sutra, the third quality, for those who've heard this might be a review. For those who haven't, this might be a little bit harder to follow. If so, let me review the first two again. The other dependent quality is that a characteristic of everything, of every experience we're ever having, anything or experience has this inconceivably dependently arising appearance. Everything, every experience then has this imaginary quality that's like when we name it and attribute a kind of essential existence, a limited essential existence to this vast inconceivable thing. Every experience has that characteristic. So it has an other dependent, inconceivable character. It has a imagined, imputed, very limited character, how we grasp things. And then all experiences and all phenomena have this perfect character, complete and perfect character. And the definition of that is the absence of this imagination in the in this arising, appearing, inconceivable pearl of experience, of universe. The perfect quality is that our names and concepts and attributions of substance and essence never actually reach the way things are appearing. This is also like saying the emptiness of things, the way our names and concepts don't adhere to this the flux of appearance. So, in the story, if the one bright pearl is this other dependent, arising quality of experience, the monk asking, how can I understand this, is like the trying to grasp it with a word. The perfect character, the thoroughly established perfect character of this situation is Xuanzha's saying, what's it got to do with understanding? What's the use of understanding? What's understanding got to do with it? How could understanding ever reach this pearl? Understanding being like getting a hold of it in some conceptual way. I think understanding in this case, we can understand to mean like a conceptual grasping. So again, this is in these kinds of stories, especially if they're new stories, we might say, well, what's this have to do with anything? And if we call this explanation understanding, yeah, what's understanding have to do with it? This. This bright pearl of a spring evening with a breeze coming through the windows as the light begins to fade, particular arising experience of time and space in our life on this planet that will never, ever, ever come again quite like this. It's miraculous, this simple, plain event of this evening. But it's so easy to overlook its miraculousness with by limiting it with our concepts. Like, I thought that I wasn't coming here just to like enjoy a spring breeze. I was coming to like learn something about Buddha's teaching, and now I'm totally confused. And so Xuanzha might say, well, what is our understanding of Buddha's teaching have to do with such an evening anyway? And yet, there's something about inquiry in this story, that the monk's inquiring, he wants to know, and the teacher kind of, it sounds a little bit scolding even to say, well, the whole universe is one bright pearl, what's the use of understanding? You know, why bother asking that? And yet the very next day, the teacher asks the same question to this student. The same question he asks, he repeats back and says, the whole universe is one bright pearl, how do you understand? The very same question that he was asked the day before, and it seems like a little bit kind of wrote him off by saying, well, what's it got to do with understanding? Now he says, well, how do you understand today? So there is this side of inquiry, and how are you going to say it now? And in the story, the monk just repeats back the same thing that the teacher said the day before. He said, well, you know, I know the answer now. The whole universe is one bright pearl. What's it got to do with understanding, right? And the teacher says, I see that you're living in the dark mountain cave of demons. One of those strange Zen phrases that we're not sure quite what he meant. We're not sure if that was criticism or praise. Often in Zen stories, it's very hard to tell. Or neither. It's just whether it's he's actually alive in the midst of this world of delusion, of the demons running through his mind in the darkness. He's actually alive because the bright pearl shines everywhere. In the darkest caves, the bright pearl is all-inclusive. The bright pearl rejects nothing at all. The bright pearl, it doesn't reject, and it doesn't prefer, and it doesn't actually do anything, and yet we're like completely immersed in it all the time. But if we try to see, well, what is this bright pearl that we're immersed in all the time? If we try to name it, even calling it the bright pearl, that already limits it. Now we have an image of, oh, it's just like this round thing. It's actually not round, and it's not bright, and it's not one. But one bright pearl maybe evokes something about the unnameable appearance of this life. So there's an appearance of one bright pearl, and then there's actually an aspect of our experience that's like non-appearing, that's non-arising, that the emptiness aspect, and that's like, what's it got to do with understanding? So Xuan Sha was a wonderful teacher, the one who said the whole universe is one bright pearl. And one other time, a monk came to him and said, I've just arrived here, and I beg you to point out a road whereby I may enter. So we may have that question now, like, this is... I don't know actually what's going on here. What is being talked about here? I can't enter this. Whatever's being talked about. Or I can't enter this bright pearl, even though we're in the midst of it all the time. We feel like we can't enter. Please point out a road whereby I may enter. And Xuan Sha said, do you hear the sound of the water in the creek nearby? And the monk said, yes. And Xuan Sha said, that's your place of entry. So very, very simple. The first experience that comes to mind, oh, how can I enter this all this confusion? What do you mean three characteristics of every phenomena? This is too much. Just like, how can I enter this peaceful reality that I hear is present, but I feel apart from. Well, we can enter it with the immediate experience, whatever's happening right now, and a simple sensory experience, a sound of the creek, is a place of entry. Any experience, but the simpler the better. And there it is, that that sound is coming to us through the benefit of, due to all things. That sound, and if we really open deeply to the sound of a creek, the hum of the highway, it's amazing that it comes to us, isn't it? That it, like, that we have ears, and that the sound of like rubber turning on a road makes this distant hum pretty far away, and that actually comes into a meditation hall. It doesn't seem so miraculous, at first. It's just like everyday experience, but the more we open to that kind of thing, to me, the more it seems miraculous that such a experience can even happen. And that's kind of like the bright pearl aspect. It's miraculous. It's inconceivable. And yet, we say, what is that? It's the sound of the cars on the highway. We name it, and it becomes this limited, ordinary, kind of meaningless event. So during Zazen, we can open to the miraculous quality of the hum of tires on a road or the sound of a creek. And enter there. It doesn't say like that's where you realize this perfect quality of everything, but it's where we enter such a contemplation, and it's all right there. Everything is right there. Everything we need is in each sound, and then it's a matter of just opening more and more deeply to what's actually happening there. What's it have to do with understanding? So if we don't understand, we may be coming out ahead. Another story from Shren Sha, case 241 in Dogen's 300 koan collection. Xuan Xia was informally addressing the assembly when he heard a swallow singing. Sounds pretty similar to the sound of the creek. So I think he seemed like he was into simple events and using them to enter what's happening. So he heard a swallow singing, and then he said to the assembly, "This is the profound dharma of real form. It skillfully conveys the essence of the true teaching." He then descended from the teaching seat. Everything's right here in the sound of the swallow. This is the profound dharma of the real marks of all things. It skillfully conveys the essence of the true teaching. This doesn't mean like the swallow. Or the sound, but this whole experience. And then he descended from the seat, like there's nothing more to say. But then a monk asking for an explanation said, "I don't understand." I mean, we might have say such a thing too. We hear a sound and the teacher says, "This is the profound dharma that includes everything, and it skillfully conveys true dharma." That's it. But the monk said, "I don't understand." And Xuan Xia said, "Go away, no one will believe you." I think. If he said, I understand what you mean, and then the teacher would say, no one will believe you. But he said, I don't understand. Go away, no one will believe you. Because we often think that we understand. Just as in the One Bright Pearl story, when Trenshaw said, what's it have to do with understanding? It seems like he's saying that understanding is kind of a problem. The monk had a problem that he didn't understand. And it sounds like this monk also says, I don't understand, and has a problem here. But I hear his, Xuanzang's answer as how wonderful that you don't understand, but like, or that you think you don't understand, but actually you probably do have some understanding here. And that was very believable, because everybody thinks that they have some understanding, but to really not understand at all, no one will ever believe you. Daido Lori Roshi's capping verse for this koan is, a jewel shining bright, absolutely no flaws, sacred and mundane, just as they are, intermingle freely. And he says, it's within the mundane that the pure light is at its brightest. That was a very nice comment. So, when thinking about the three characteristics of all phenomena as taught in the Sandhi Nirmochana Sutra, the light gets a little bit dimmed. I think it's very useful to study this sutra, so we've been doing it for months now. But actually listening to the hum of the cars on the highway, the light is at its brightest. I think that's what he means by the mundane, just the everyday, like of the world, the things of the world as they're appearing. The light is very bright. You have to understand that this is, we're in the middle of Sesshin, so this talk is not necessarily about anything. We're just, looking at jewels, and warm jewels and bright pearls. So in case 92 of the Book of Serenity, the teacher Yunmen said, within heaven and earth, in space and time, there is a jewel hidden in the mountain of form. I propose it's the same, one bright pearl. A jewel hidden in the mountain of form. And this is a quote from Master Zhao's Jewel Treasury Treatise, a pre-Zen text. And the whole passage says, within heaven and earth, in space and time, there is a jewel hidden in the mountain of form. It cognizes things, emptily shining, empty inside and out, alone and still, invisible. Its function is a dark mystery. Hidden in the mountain of form, like things. This room is like a mountain of forms and things. Hidden within all of that, there's a jewel. So, if we say the whole universe is one bright pearl, it sounds like the whole universe is hidden in the bright pearl, but also the bright pearl is hidden in the mountain of form, in all things. All things are in it, and it's in all things. That's the nature of the other dependent character. It cognizes things, this jewel. Emptily shining, empty inside and out, alone and still, one jewel, invisible. Its function is a dark mystery. It's a dark mystery, but if we try to know it, then it's no longer mysterious. Then it's just a book, and it's just the sound of a tire on the road. That's not so mysterious. That's just a mundane event. But is there a way in which the hum of the road is a dark mystery? Or is there a dark mystery of the hum of the tires hidden in the mountain of tires and forms? Shui Do brought this up and said, within heaven and earth, in space and time, there is a jewel. Hung on a wall for 9 years, Bodhidharma did not dare to look right at it. Bodhidharma, our founder who brought Zen from India to China, carried this jewel in his pocket from India, and when he got to this cave at Shaolin, he knocked a little nail into the wall, and he took the jewel out of his pocket and just hung it there on the wall next to him in the cave, and for 9 years he did not dare to look right at it. Now, if a patch-robed monk wants to see it, I'll hit him. That's a Zen talk. But it will hurt a little bit, I think, to look right at such a dark mystery. It will hurt because it's so diminishing of the vastness of this pearl. To call it a book is it hurts a little bit. Not so much. I think we have to be sitting a lot, I think, very still to feel the pain of calling a book, and to feel the even the pain of calling joyful stillness. It's like we lose the sense of the mystery, the dark mystery, by naming things. We have to do this, but it's somewhat painful. So, I didn't finish the story of Yunmen. He just quotes this text. Within heaven and earth and space and time, there is a jewel hidden in the mountain of form. Then he says, holding up the lamp, heading into the Buddha hall, bringing the mountain gate on the lamp. I refuse to comment further. The very next case is number 93. It's called 92 is called Yunmen's Jewel. 93 is called Lutsu's Not Understanding. Neither one of these, by the way, brings up one bright pearl, but they seem to be compatible stories. Hmm. The introduction says, a precious gem hits a magpie, a rat bites a gold piece. They don't know that they're treasures and they can't put them to use. Is there anyone who suddenly notices the jewel hidden in his clothes? So Lutsu asks Nanchuan, the wish-fulfilling jewel, people don't know. It is personally obtained from the treasury of realization of thusness. Or it is personally obtained from the storehouse of the thus come one, the Tathagata Garbha, the thus come one's storehouse of thusness. The wish-fulfilling jewel, people don't know it, but it comes from the treasury of thusness, let's say. And what is that treasury? Lutsu asks. So this whole thing is Lutsu saying, this wish-fulfilling jewel that people don't know, it personally is obtained from this treasury of thusness. What is this treasury? And Nanchuan says, that in me which comes and goes with you is it. How beautiful a response. That, if we're speaking of the one bright pearl that's arising and ceasing each moment, dependent on each of us, co-created by each of us, what is this jewel that comes from the this treasury of suchness? That in me, which comes and goes with you, is it. That aspect of me that comes and goes with the aspect in you that comes and goes is this jewel. And I say, same bright pearl as Xuanzha's whole universe, bright pearl. That in me which comes and goes with you is it. And Lutsu says, what about that which doesn't come and go? And Nanchuan says, it's also the treasury. So it's the treasury, not the jewel actually, it's the treasury of suchness is that which comes and goes with you. What about that which, that doesn't come and go? That's also this treasury of suchness. So without getting too complex, it's, you know, we can see this other dependent, inconceivable appearance that we're co-creating, coming and going in me with you is this treasury. And that which doesn't come and go, that which words don't reach, the unreachability by words, the perfect character of suchness, emptiness itself, that's also the treasury. So these two are not so different. This is something we've been talking about in class a little bit. But, well, you know, there's dependent co-arising and then there's emptiness. And I hear the story as saying both of them are this treasury of suchness. And then Lutsu says, what's the jewel? The jewel that's personally obtained from the treasury of suchness? Nanchuan called him, Lutsu! And Lutsu said, yes. And Nanchuan said, go away. You don't understand my words. So we have all these issues about understanding and not understanding and which is right and we have jewels coming and going that are called jewels, and then we grasp them as such, and we understand this is a problem, we don't understand this is a problem. Dogen says, the expression, the whole universe is one bright pearl, originated with Shrenshaw. Its deep meaning is that the whole universe is neither vast and expansive nor minute and small. It's not square or round, middle or true. Its dynamic workings are neither the lively darting of fish nor the disclosure of forms distinct and clear. Moreover, because it is not birth and death, or coming and going, just so it is birth and death, coming and going. Because this is the way it is the past departing from here, and the present appearing from here. If it is penetrated to the bottom, who will see it as being limited to being a movement from life to death? Who can see it as being nothing but stillness? So, just a couple minutes, if you'd like to bring up anything. Yes?
I would just like to put it into a language I normally use. It seems to me that what teacher has done to the student on the first day is say, I dare you, after this big revelation, I dare you to suffer over this. And the next day he's saying, I dare you to see suffering over this. And he seems to be saying,
I dare you to suffer over this?
No, the first day he's saying, I dare you to suffer over this. Because he says, I don't understand. Okay, I dare you to suffer over this. The next day he comes
I
back,
dare you to? Then?
Yeah, he's putting a challenge to the student.
Oh, see if you can suffer over this?
Yeah, he says, here's this wonderful truth.
What's
stands,
it?
Stands on
it,
so okay, suffer. The next day he says, turns and he says, okay, now I dare you to see suffering over it. He changes the phrase a little bit. It's like, from what you're saying now, it's like he's saying, what you're naming can be somewhat relevant and somewhat useful while you're naming it. But it's never necessary nor sufficient.
Yeah. Naming is somewhat useful and relevant, and we have to do it, but it's never necessary and sufficient. And so it's not a matter of not naming anymore. It's just a matter of not believing
it lasts beyond this moment,
yeah.
And that there's an appropriate thing you can do with this at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
One appropriate thing to do here at this moment. Next moment's a whole other thing.
Mm-hmm. And even in this moment, to live this moment, do this moment, name however we have to, but on a deeper level, to not really believe that what we think is happening is what's happening.
So the joke is, you're suffering when you don't understand, and when you understand, you're suffering.
And then what's the end of suffering?
Being there.
Is it in with understanding or no understanding?
It's not an issue.
It's not an issue. Yeah, when understanding and not understanding ceases to be an issue.
Humming of the wheels on the road is a somewhat useful and relevant idea if you're looking to drive to Monterey and you want to find the road.
Yeah, so to say, what's it got to do with understanding is not criticizing understanding, it's just saying, what's the one pearl actually got to do with understanding? Nothing really. And yet, it's okay to understand. It's okay that there's a one bright pearl that can't be understood. And what's one got to do with the other?
If you're looking at Drive to Monterey, finding the highway is a one bright pearl, especially if you're lost.
And getting lost is also one bright pearl. And in fact, Dogen says at the end, whatever we make of this, you know, of this dark cave of demons, is, you know, there's many punchlines, right? But the final punchline of the whole essay, excuse me for skipping ahead, but I think it's just so wonderful for people who aren't going to finish Sesshin. You're all welcome to come to the rest of the talks of Sesshin if you'd like. But if you don't, let me just finish with this. Who can be anxious as to whether birth and death are or are not the bright pearl? Even if there is doubt and anxiety, they are the bright pearl. There is not a single activity or thought that is not the bright pearl. And consequently, both advancing and retreating in the black mountain cave of demons is nothing but the one bright pearl. Hallelujah. May the one bright pearl consume all beings, chew them up thoroughly, spit them out into the ocean of brightness. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable.